We are in Acts chapter 23, but we're not there today. In Acts chapter 23, you may remember that Paul is appearing before the Sanhedrin, and there is an interesting development there. You have in that Sanhedrin Pharisees and Sadducees. And it is because of that composition that something very interesting happens. Paul is essentially delivered from that judicial inquiry simply because there is a distinct split between the Pharisees and the Sadducees. Over the years, we've looked at some things as far as the different religious sects. Because of where we are in Acts, want to go ahead and spend some time there as far as describing, looking at what these guys were like. So I prepared a sheet for you in part so we can make it a little easier in class to read through these passages, and also a reference guide. I went through and looked at every passage in the New Testament which refers to Pharisees. Not everyone is on here, but what I would think of as the key passages, they are on here. So we're going to come back and ask for possible readers in just a couple minutes, but let's look at some of the introductory information. We don't have an exact time frame as far as when the Pharisees came into being. The best estimates that we have would be less than 200 years before Jesus came into the world. So they had about five generations of people. Prior to the Maccabean War, it looks like when you go back and study about the Hellenization of the Jews, that is, Greek culture was being forced on the Jews, there were some people who didn't like it. It's kind of like today. If you look at a society, a country where a certain view is being imposed, and there are people in that country, they don't want that view, they're going to resist. So the Pharisees, you might think of them as the resistors. The Pharisees said, we need to stay with God, we need to stay with the law of Moses, and that wasn't a bad thing. I mean, they were headed in the right direction. But a lot of times you have a movement which starts off in a particular way. Maybe the principles, the founding principles are good. People have clear thinking, but as time comes, begins to pass, that doesn't turn out to be quite like it was intended. All right, you have in about 175 to 163 B.C., a ruler, you may be familiar with him, Antiochus Epiphanes. He was a guy who really did some offensive things to the Jews, tried to destroy the scriptures, tried to say that even if you consented to Moses' law, if you had a copy of Moses' law, then you needed to be put to death. When you go back and you start looking at this period of time, your Bible probably does not have the books known as Maccabees, but if you have a Catholic Bible or access to a Catholic Bible, or you can find them online, there are the Maccabean books. Those books, we do not regard them as inspired. They were not written by an apostle. But even though you don't have an inspired book, if you have a book which takes you back to that general time period, there can be sometimes some historical value there. So as you go back and you start looking at, again, these books which are in the Catholic Bible, in this case, 1 Maccabees 1, verses 56 and 57, you'd have some information about Antiochus. Ultimately, that relates to the Pharisees. It's like anything else. If you have people who are living a certain way, they have certain beliefs, and people start challenging those beliefs, they start overthrowing those beliefs, we see it right now with abortion. For the people who are pro-abortion, for a long time, they thought the abortion matter was settled. But now that it is not settled, possibly, we'll see what happens with the Supreme Court decision. What do we see as far as people who support abortion? They're starting to rally together, right? Let's have a movement here. Let's protest there, those kinds of things. And that's sort of what brought the Pharisees together, helped them coalesce a little bit. Then you've got the time of John Hyrcanus. You may be familiar with him, about 100 years before Christ. By that time, the Pharisees were well known. And then I've got a little more historical information there, as well as another paragraph. This is paragraph 3, as far as some of the basic divisions. And those basic divisions between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, that's what Paul appeals to in Acts chapter 23. You may remember the old expression, divide and conquer. Well, that's kind of what Paul does in Acts chapter 23. He says, I'm a Pharisee. I'm a son of the Pharisees. I'm here because of the resurrection. Well, the Pharisees still probably had some issues with Paul, but, I mean, he was singing their favorite song, so to speak, on that point. So they're kind of looking at him and thinking, well, you know, probably not such a bad guy. But the Sadducees, on the other hand, they didn't believe in that stuff. They didn't believe in the resurrection. They didn't believe in angel spirits. So there is this great debate. It almost turns out to be what it seems to be, a fist fight. And Paul, the attention shifts from him. Now let's jump down to that fourth paragraph, and then you can start to see the passages that we have in bold. I will pause here for just a second. We had some other people come in. Because of all the verses that we have, we're looking for readers. So we have four up there right now, and we'll take these in order, and then we'll just go back to the top. Are there any other members of the class that are willing to read? All right, so Gary, we're going to put you after Don. That's going to be Don Harper. Anybody else willing to read?
Betty? Anybody else? Don't want to overlook someone. Okay, if you change your mind, let me know.
Let's go down to that fourth paragraph. When we look at the Pharisees, and you see this with Jesus, they had several encounters with him. They believed in rigid obedience to the law. And that's not bad. You know, when we think about this is what God says, this is what we need to do. The problem is, what did the Pharisees do? They said, follow God's law, but also follow... Yes, all these man-made rules, commands, and ideas. And that became a problem. There was another issue, and the Bible has a lot to say about this. It doesn't start in the New Testament, but it is continued in the New Testament. The Pharisees were good. They were experts at what kind of righteousness, just like people today. Yeah, it would be like saying, what would be a good illustration of that? I was thinking in terms of fruit. That's probably a little hard to cover up. But what about somebody who has an old rusty vehicle and they just paint over?
Whitewashing?
Yeah, kind of like whitewashing. You know, there's the old fence out there. It looks horrible, but they put a new coat of paint on it, and maybe that is able to cover up some damage. So the Pharisees were really good as far as hiding what was on the inside. And they really created some problems. All right, two places we'll read about the Pharisees, and Jesus is really stiff in his condemnation. Luke chapter 11. And also in Matthew chapter 23. Let's start with Luke chapter 11 and verse 37. And then as you can see, we'll pick up with Mark 7, 1 to 3. And John chapter 7, verses 45 through 49 for our respective readers. Let's begin with that Luke reference, Luke 11, verse 37. And Steve, that's going to be you. Steve Saylor.
And as he spoke, a certain Pharisee asked him to dine with him. So he went in and sat down to eat.
All right, so we have here, and this is not the only occasion where someone invited Jesus in for a meal. But the Pharisees, if you were that religious, you were that influential, and we'll see some of that. And Jesus shows up on the scene, and he's doing all these interesting things, and he's engaging in all this teaching. If you're a Pharisee, do you think you're going to be attracted to Jesus? He's kind of infringing on your territory a little bit, so it would make sense to get to know him a little bit better, to see what he's about, to see if you oppose him, if maybe you can show that there is some kind of fraud. So Jesus comes to this meal, and we're not going to read at this time some other information from Luke chapter 11, but let's take a look at Mark chapter 7, verses 1 through 3, because if a Jew went to a meal, Mark tells us what they did.
And the Pharisees and some of the scribes gathered together around him when they had come from Jerusalem and had seen that some of his disciples were eating their bread with impure hands, that is, unwashed. For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they carefully wash their hands, thus observing the traditions of the elders.
Thank you. What would be a practice that is so prevalent or pervasive in our world that if somebody doesn't do it, it gets attention?
They don't cover their mouth and they cough in a public place.
All right, especially with COVID. I think a lot of people would say, he didn't cover his mouth. You know, maybe they're ready to get the hand sanitizer and just make a swipe across the mouth or something. But especially with COVID, that is a big deal. People would certainly pay attention to that. The Jews, and especially the Pharisees, they were big into this hand washing. And it was not related to hygiene. It was not related to Moses' law. It was just this ceremony that they went through. It was this tradition that had been bound. And they believed that this is something that you better do. All right, Jesus shows up on the scene. Luke chapter 11 that we just read part of. He's invited to this meal, and if you're the Pharisee, you've invited this super preacher over, you would expect that he would certainly do what? He would wash his hands. He would follow that prescribed ritual. But Jesus didn't do it. And do you think that the Pharisee in Luke chapter 11 noticed? Oh, yes, he did. All right, let's continue the story a little bit. Let's take a look at John chapter 7, verses 45 through 49.
Then the officers came to the chief priests and Pharisees, who said to them, "Why have you not brought him?" The officers answered, "No man ever spoke like this man." Then the Pharisees answered them, "Are you also deceived? Have any of the rulers or the Pharisees believed in him? But this crowd that does not know the law is accursed."
All right, we have the word elitist on our sheet. When we say someone is an elitist, what do we mean?
Special.
All right, that would be a good beginning point. Can we see anything else?
What did she say?
Special.
Better than.
Yes. It's not only I am special, but I am better. I am in a class which is superior to your class. You are a commoner. I am not. You know, I'm well-heeled. I've got money, and I've got power, and I've got influence, and all these things. When you look at John 7, and verses 45 through 49, would you say that the Pharisees were the elitists of the day? Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. They felt like they were the elitists. They thought they were the elitists, and they presented themselves as the elitists. So here they are. Who's this Jesus? None of the Pharisees have believed on him. Be like today, no politician recognizes him. No sports figure recognizes him. Nobody with power and influence recognizes him. So they were the elitists of this day and time. And one of their elitist rules was the hand washing that we saw in Mark chapter 7. We could have read down verses 2, 3, and 4 as well, but we're going to skip that. Let's move down to Luke chapter 11 and verse 40. Going back to that chapter, we picked up from Luke chapter 11. We have Jesus invited to the meal, and you have this Pharisee. He notices that Jesus does not wash his hands. And Luke 11, verse 40, we'll then ask you to read, if you're that reader, to also read verses 43 and 44. So that's going to be Don Harper, I think, right? Let's start with Luke 11, 40, Don.
Ye fools, is not he that made that which is without make that which is within also?
Okay, Jesus, he doesn't beat around the bush. When this becomes an issue, he realizes that his host is upset about that. He said, you are a fool. But does he use a singular or does he use the plural? You fools. Well, he's only invited by one Pharisee, but what does it sound like? It sounds like, well, there's more than one. It's plural. It sounds like there's some other Pharisees at this gathering, and I think the text does lend good credence to that conclusion. And Jesus doesn't just fault one. He faults them all. He said, you are fools. Now, that's not a bad word in Bible terms as far as how it's being used here, but it is a fairly strong word. It would be like saying today, anybody remember Hogan's Heroes? All right, what was Sergeant Schultz often called by Colonel Klink? You, nobody remember?
Idiot.
Well, you're close. Dummkopf.
Dummkopf.
I've never looked it up as far as the German language, but I'm guessing it means something like idiot. You know, you're really dumb. You're stupid. You're a fool. And when people say that, generally their attention is, I wonder if he really meant that. Well, yeah, Jesus did. Don, let's stay in that same chapter, Luke chapter 11, but let's see what we have in verse 43. These fellas, they filled their lives with wrong priorities. They were thinking about, again, all the wrong things, really. And in that 43rd verse.
Woe unto you, Pharisees, for ye love the uppermost seats in the synagogues and greetings in the markets.
Okay. I've got the answer in the sheet, but what were they after? As far as these greetings in the marketplaces, and they were looking for the best seats.
Attention.
They wanted attention. They wanted recognition. It's kind of odd. Today, this isn't true of everybody, but especially if people come into a new congregation, but a lot of people want to sit where when it comes to church building? At the back, in the middle, or at the front?
In the back.
In the back. Or maybe in the middle. How many people want to be up here in the front? Not too many. I mean, every once in a while you find somebody, but those seats are generally open spots. And I don't think that they're saving them for somebody who might need them. It's just we do not want to sit that close to the front. But if you were a Pharisee, they had sort of a circular seating. And if you're up here in the front, you know, you're off here. And, I mean, this is the front. And you come up here. Are you in the premium spot as far as attention? I mean, everybody's going to see you. I mean, you know. Pews back, as far as where I normally stand, is one thing, but I mean, they sought the most prominent spot. And if you're going to give a discourse, you're going to explain Moses' law, you're right up there in front, you're in a good position to hop right up and take care of something, right? So these fellas, they wanted to be recognized. And when we start beginning to construct a picture of them in the New Testament, you can see why Jesus was so strong in his rebuke. All right, Don, we're going to call on you twice more here, at least for right now. Let's move down to Luke 11 and verse 44, please.
Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye are as graves which appear not, and the men that walk over them are not aware of them.
Okay, anybody ever walked through a cemetery? You think you've ever walked across a grave that was unmarked? I mean, you know, America's been around for a long time. I'm sure we've probably got some people right next door, you know, that were buried a long time ago, maybe in a war. And we don't think anything about it. But if you were a Jew, what about an unmarked grave? You have contact with the dead. That unmarked grave, what happens? There is that contamination. There is that ceremonial defilement. So the Jews were concerned about that. They would whitewash graves so the local people might know where those bodies were buried, but out-of-town people, if they came into town. So Jesus says, I want to describe your spiritual life. And I'm going to compare you to what? You're like a grave. We talked recently as far as some of the tombstones that we find in our day and time, the grave markers. I mean, they're beautiful. Multiple colors. Sometimes they're large, ornate. Maybe they're made out of granite, some expensive stone. And they are really, really beautiful things to look at. Works of art in some places. And they cover up things that we don't want to see. There's the stench. There's the foul odor. I know the embalming has changed that a little bit. But Jesus says, you look like a grave marker, which is very picturesque. It's pretty. But inside, you're full of rottenness and evil. All right, Don, once more, and then we're going to turn over to Matthew 23 with the next reading. Luke chapter 11 and verse 45.
Then answered one of the lawyers and said unto him, Master, thus saying thou reproachest us also.
Okay, so this goes back to what we said earlier as far as the plural. When Jesus talked about the fools, it does look like there were more. Some of the Pharisees were also lawyers or scribes. We'll see that a little bit later in the lesson. But when he speaks up, he understands that as a Pharisee, as a fellow Pharisee, that Jesus has condemned him and condemned him strongly or roundly. And he says, you know, we're offended. Well, again, Jesus wanted them to be offended. He wanted them to see just how inwardly wicked and rotten they were. Now, this is Luke's account. If you were to read through the Bible, you might think you should get over to Matthew chapter 23. And I think for a lot of people, they're more familiar with Matthew 23 than what we have in Luke chapter 11. But you have Luke 11. And then time-wise, it looks like about 6 months, about half a year passes, and then Jesus has another occasion with the Pharisees. This later occasion, about 6 months later, Jesus again says several of the things that he said back in Luke chapter 11. It almost looks like Luke chapter 11 is sort of foundational. Jesus goes after them, and then he tangles with them again, and even gets into an additional illustration. So after Don, we've got Gary. So, Gary, let's head you over to Matthew 23, and we'll have you read a couple verses here as well. Let's start you off with Matthew chapter 23 and verse 2.
The scribes and the Pharisees sit on Moses' seat.
Okay, so Jesus, as he talks about the Pharisees, he said they assume a teaching position. And that's right. We've already seen that as far as where they wanted to sit. They wanted those prominent seats in the synagogue assemblies. They wanted to be in a place where they could easily tell people, at least explain to people what they believe their version of the law was. And then as we move down to that next verse, Gary, let's see what we have in verse 3 of Matthew 23.
So do and observe whatever they tell you, but not the works they do, for they preach, but do not practice.
All right. There were certainly some things as they talked about Moses' law that they must have gotten right. But Jesus said, do not emulate them in what way? You might listen to them. You might actually pick up some good stuff. There were some problems along the way. But do not do what?
Copy.
Do not copy their
actions.
Their actions. Their example is a rotten example. Let's take a look at verse 5, Gary. We'll continue to read with you, and then we'll pick up with our next reader, and then Gary will come back to you from Matthew chapter 23 and verse 6. And just keep it there in Matthew chapter 23. We'll just make you our default Matthew 23 reader because we'll have that scattered here and there. All right, so Matthew 23 and verse 5.
They do all their deeds to be seen by others, for they make their phylacteries broad and their fringes long.
Okay, so they did works. They did, some translations would use the word many works, from what their garments look like to all kinds of other things. And let's see what one of those other things were. Matthew chapter 9 and verse 14. It might require you to take a minute to get there, but Betty, I think that's going to be you. When you're ready, Matthew chapter 9 and verse 14.
One of the disciples of John came to him saying, why do we and the Pharisees fast often, but the disciples do not fast?
Okay. What would you think if somebody came to you and said, oh boy, I fast? And, you know, maybe they were going through a severe difficulty in life and they said, I've been fasting about that, and we would kind of understand that. But what if they told you, I fasted. I just fasted again this week. It was worse than last week. Reminds me of the fast 10 years ago. If they were to go down that kind of road and describe their fasting in those kinds of terms, what would you think about that person?
They were bragging.
Yeah. I mean, you wouldn't have to listen too long before, after about the third reference to the fast, and that's the picture that you get of the Pharisees. Oh, I'm so hungry. Finally able to eat today. I've been fasting for 3 days. See how much I've lost as far as weight? Well, for some people, they might hear that and think, what about these people? Oh, man, you're
religious.
Yeah, you're a very spiritual person. I mean, I don't fast that often. You know, I like my Twinkies, and I like my, you know, this, that, and the other thing, and all the desserts, and you guys really do well. But let's take a look at that in terms of Gary. Now, Matthew chapter 23 and verse 6.
And they love the place of honor at feasts and the best seats in the synagogues.
Okay. Did they fast because they didn't like to eat? No. When it was mealtime, they showed up. But they wanted that recognition, they wanted that attention, and they were willing to get it in a lot of different ways. They wanted the praise of man versus the praise of God. All right, now if these characters are sort of the bigwigs in Israel, trying to see, you know, what's going on, trying to have their hand on every pot, not only probably did they encounter Jesus, but who else do you think they might have encountered? Before the Lord. There you go. John the Baptist. Let's take a look at Matthew chapter 3 and verse 7. Steve, and that's going to be Steve Saylor. We're going to go back to you for Matthew chapter 3 and verse 7. Then Gary, we're going to flip back to you for Matthew chapter 23. Especially we'll emphasize the latter part of verse 14.
When he saw many of the Pharisees and Sadducees coming to his baptism, he said to them, "Brood of vipers, who warned you to flee from the wrath that was to come?"
Okay. All right. Here's John. Pharisees are coming, and he calls them some snakes. Do you put every snake in the same category? I kind of do, but I recognize. I recognize that there's a difference between a garter snake and a rattlesnake. I don't like snakes. But anyway, you know, if somebody had said, you know, you're a bunch of garter snakes, yeah, okay, probably not a real nice compliment, but I mean, not all that bad. But if somebody says you're a bunch of rattlesnakes, then what's the image?
Something bad.
Yeah, you guys, you know, you're doing some very bad things. You are dangerous to other people, and that's exactly the point that John the Baptist was making. Now, here's the odd thing about that. As dangerous, as wicked, as evil, as corrupt as these people were, think back to the illustration where Jesus talked about the grave and how the rottenness is on the inside. Let's see what we've got in Matthew chapter 23, verse 14, especially looking at the first part of the verse, and then Gary will come back in just a minute after Luke chapter 18, 10, 11, and pick up with the first part of that. Matthew 23, 14.
Question.
Yeah.
My World Bible School Bible does not have a verse 14.
Okay, there's probably a textual variant there.
So I had to pull out one of these.
Okay, all right, let's get the authorized version.
Okay. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayer. Therefore ye shall receive the greater damnation.
Okay, so think back to the synagogue. It's a Saturday, everybody's come together, and the Pharisee is called on to lead the opening prayer. Based on that verse, what would you expect? What would be more likely than not as far as that prayer?
Long.
It's going to be a long prayer. So, again, maybe they, as we're going to see in just a minute from Luke chapter 18, verses 10 and 11, prayed this kind of prayer. But whatever the prayer was, there's a good chance that it would have been along the lines of self-glorification. I think, ever really remember where a person got up, a man got up and prayed in public, and it was anything like the prayer of a Pharisee. But it's possible. And we're going to see that now from Luke chapter 18, verses 10 and 11.
Two men went up into the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax gatherer. The Pharisee stood and was praying thus to himself, "God, I thank thee that I am not like other people, swindlers, unjust, adulterers, and even like this tax gatherer."
Now, can you imagine somebody praying that prayer? "God, I thankful I'm not like the wicked people in this assembly. I mean, they never come, and they never do anything, and they're just lazy dogs. I'm the hardest worker who's here." I mean, it would just be unthinkable. We're just too much of a polite society to do this. But, I mean, here you have, and again, you don't know whether the Pharisee was praying out loud or not. Maybe he was just praying this in his mind, and his thoughts are recorded. That thought is not specifically, I think, indicated in the text. But again, it gives you another picture of what these guys were like and why Jesus is so severe. I mean, Jesus really hits these people hard on multiple occasions.
Apparently that Pharisee's mother never taught him that what you say about others says more about you than it says about them.
Yes, and he's really pouring out the evil in his heart. I mean, he's just filled with pride and, again, thinks that he's God's gift to man, so to speak. Betty, I thought you raised a hand as well. Yeah. Everything comes back to self versus God. And that's the exact opposite. But these fellas, they were the religious leaders in many respects in Israel. And that's why Jesus said, don't follow their example. They're going to lead you to destruction. They're going to give you some good teaching at times because they were pulling from the law. But some of the other stuff, they imposed burdens which were just extremely difficult to bear for people. Steve?
Makes me think of a song Mac Davis sang back in the 70s. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when I'm perfect in every way.
Pretty much. Yes, he captured the thought there very well. Okay, that ended on the hands. Gary, let's go back to you and see now what we've got in Matthew chapter 23 and verse 14. And then we're going to pick up Luke 16, 14. New reader. 23, 14.
Again?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses.
Stop right there. Thank you. All right. He said you're a Pharisee, and what do you do? When it comes to the widow's house, what do you do?
Destroy.
Well, some versions might say destroy, but I don't think they're burning down the house. What did your version say? They
devour.
They devour. How do you devour a house?
Take it away from them.
Yeah. And how would you do that as a Pharisee? I gave you the hint earlier. Remember, I said that some Pharisees were also lawyers or scribes. If you're going to have legal work done, even now, who do you go see?
Lawyer.
You go see the lawyer. You go see the attorney. You go see the person who deals with legal stuff. And there were some Pharisees who were also the legal experts. They did some things. So if you're the widow and your husband dies, again, especially in that day and time, women didn't have the rights that they have now, you're thinking, well, you know, at least he left me a house. There's no life insurance, and, you know, I don't have too many resources, but I at least have a house. So I'm going to go down to who? Mr.
Attorney.
Who is the Pharisee, and he's real spiritual, right? He's got all these long prayers, and, you know, he's got the religious garments, and he looks so good, and he's so righteous. He's going to help me. He's going to be a servant of God. Well, God says he's like the wolf at the door, right? What's he going
to
do? He knows how to work the system. So poor Widow Jones, just take this piece of paper and do what?
Sign it,
and you're good. I'll take care of you. Yeah, you will. And she's lost her house. You think she's going to have any recourse with that Pharisee?
No.
I mean, the system is rigged against her. So when you look at the depravity of these guys, you have to ask the question, why did they act as they did? Well, let's take a look at Luke chapter 16 and verse 14.
Now the Pharisees, who were lovers of money, also heard all these things, and they derided him.
Okay, if you truly love money, how far would you be willing to go to get more of it? Would you be willing to cheat a widow out of her house? If you truly love, yeah. Cheat a widow out of her car. I mean, whatever she has. It's, you know, I don't love you, and as Betty noted earlier, I really don't love God. I'm in love with myself. And whatever I can get, by whatever means, to make my life better, that's what I'm going to do. And that poor widow, I don't care about her. She might freeze to death. You know, she might starve to death. It's not my problem. She signed the document. And just like people today, it's all what? It's all legal. Well, that might be true, but being legal doesn't mean that it is right, or we might say moral. Those kinds of things. Anything that you want to add or ask? All right, now, based on everything that we've looked at, let's take a look at what Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount. Let's go back to Matthew chapter 5 and verse 20. I think when you start compiling this information together, you can say, okay, yeah, I can really begin to see the pieces click. I can understand why this passage says that, or why Jesus made this point or offered this condemnation. Matthew 5 and verse 20.
For I say to you that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven.
All right, doesn't that passage make a lot of sense now? Jesus said, here's the level of the Pharisees' righteousness. How high was it? It was in the sewer, right? It looked good to the people from what they saw. Everything on the outside looked great. But Jesus said, if you're at that level of righteousness or below, where's your eternity going to be? Hell. He said, your righteousness has to do what when it comes to the righteousness of the Pharisees? It has to exceed. It has to be greater than that. And that passage makes perfect sense based on all the things that we have seen. Now, if you were in the first century and you had heard Jesus make that statement, do you think that as the average Jew, you'd be surprised?
Yes.
I mean, I probably would have been thinking these guys are the finest people I've ever met. But you look a little deeper and you begin to see that that was not true. Anything that you want to add or ask before we look at Matthew chapter 9 and verse 11? All right, Don, I believe that's you, Don Harper. And then we'll ask you to stand that same chapter and read for us Matthew 9. And then our next reader, Matthew chapter 12. Matthew 9 and verse 11.
And when the Pharisees saw that, they said unto his disciples, why eateth your master with publicans and sinners?
All right, so this is not the only time, but Pharisees, their view of the sinner, the person who was, in their mind, in a different class, you would think perhaps as far as the poor people, people who were involved in sins that they thought were really bad, how much contact did they want to have with them? No. It'd be like a doctor today. You know, if you imagine a doctor, I think you probably have that. If you have a doctor who goes to school and he's thinking, I've spent a lot of money in medical school and now I want to work where? I put in my time, so I want to have what kind of practice?
Medical practice.
Okay, but where, how, and what? What kind of practice does he want?
You're a big fancy hospital.
Yeah, I want a big fancy hospital. I want a nice office staff. I want convenient hours. You know, maybe banker hours as they. I just want cushy. Okay, I deserve it. I earned it. Well, okay. You know, you are positioned to do that. But what if you take that doc? And you say, we're going to send you over to the most remote village in the world right now. And every nasty health problem that you can imagine is going to be there. You know, you'll be lucky to get a tent. You'll probably be sleeping outside. And, you know, you got to get all the shots and the chance of infection or dying. How's that doctor who wants the cushy feeling going to feel about going to that kind of place? Not for me. You know, I didn't do all this stuff to get into that, did I? You know, I want to be over here in the great hospital. The Pharisees were kind of like that. As the elitists, who did they want to fellowship with? I want to be with people who are rich. I want to be with people who are powerful. I want to be with the people who can help me. So when they see this Jesus character showing up, he appears to really have some things that are noteworthy. The Pharisees say, ooh, who's he fellowship with? He's out there with the sinners, and he's not so interested in the elites, at least joining with them and doing the things that they do. So they didn't like that very much because they were utterly corrupt. Here is, as we look at Matthew chapter 9, let's go back, Don, to that 34th verse, down a little further in the chapter.
But the Pharisees said, he casteth out devils through the prince of the devils.
Okay, they didn't like the fact that Jesus was not part of their group, so when Jesus does this amazing miracle, casts out a demon, their only recourse is to say what? He did it by the devil's power. All right, let's take a look. Jesus heals a man on the Sabbath day, Matthew chapter 12 and verse 13. And then let's see how they respond to that, Matthew 12, 14. And then after that, a new reader from Matthew chapter 27, verses 62 to 64. Matthew 12, 14.
But the Pharisees went out and conspired against him how to destroy him.
All right, if you're not going to be part of our club, if you're not going to be on board with our actions, we want to get rid of you. And that's exactly what they find. But they didn't stop there. Take a look at Matthew chapter 27, 62 to 64.
On the next day, which followed the day of preparation, the chief priests and Pharisees gathered together to Pilate, saying, sir, we remember while he was still alive that the Caesar said, after 3 days I will rise. Therefore, he made
man that the tomb be made secure until the third day. His disciples come by night and steal him away and say to the people, he has risen from the dead. So the last deception will be worse than the first.
These guys, they tangle with Jesus at different times. Jesus engages them, and now the Lord finally goes to the cross. He finally dies. They must have breathed a sigh of relief. He's out of our hair. We're not going to have to deal with him anymore. But they're still remembering that Jesus had made some claims about coming back from the dead. So maybe it's just kind of like, once more, let's go get a guard. Let's go to Pilate and let's see if we can finally lock this down and get rid of this guy. So Jesus was a huge thorn in the side. And if the Jews in the first century were going to get on track, if they were going to be righted with God, John the Baptist has got to deal with the Pharisees. He does. We've already seen that as far as the brood of vipers. Jesus also has to take these people head on and deal with them. And they were, I mean, you talk about dealing, confronting the establishment. That's what these people were. They had a lock on many things. They were extremely powerful. And for the average, it would be like today. People say, you can't buck the government. You can't buck the system. And that for the Jew would have been how they felt like the Pharisee. There's just no way for us to bulldoze our way through this. When you start looking at the Pharisees, let's pick up here Matthew 12, Matthew 15, Luke chapter 7. We'll skip the Matthew 7, 1 through 5 reference. I think that's pretty familiar to us. But when you deal with these people in the Bible, based on all the things that we've looked at, you'd be inclined to think that they probably would have been the fault-finding, nitpicky kind of people that Jesus talked about in Matthew chapter 7 when he gave the illustration as far as the mote and the beam. And that's exactly what they were like. Matthew 12, 1 through 2, who has it and is ready to go? Steve?
At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples were hungry and began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. Then when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath.
All right, isn't it interesting that Matthew uses limited space, but he talks about the Pharisees, and he says the Pharisees, they saw something. What were they looking for? What were they looking at? What did they see? The disciples are going through a grain field, and they're just plucking some grain. They're working on the Sabbath. Now, that sounds pretty petty to me. But when you start looking at the Spirit, it's still around. When I was in Tennessee, I mentioned before, happened to have a Bible professor house with me at that home. And he came to say goodbye when I was pulling out, and we started a quick conversation again. And he told me about something that I didn't know. Maybe you've seen this in different parts of the world. They exist. Anybody, and they pronounce it differently, but it's a Sabbath elevator. Anybody ever hear of a Sabbath elevator? I hadn't. I said, don't leave quite yet. I said, tell me about that. He said, well, if you go to Israel, and again, I would imagine New York, some of the places have them, but a Sabbath elevator is when you go in it, you don't have to push a button. The elevator stops at every floor automatically. Because if you had to push the button, that would be working. I kid you not. You're actually having to physically push a button, and then there's a circuit that has to go through and complete the loop and everything. So not so much, I guess, your physical act, but you are doing something small that creates with the relays and different things in the elevator. And that sounds insane to us, but that will give you the mindset of what the Pharisees were like. They were so nitpicky. And when Jesus comes along and starts doing all the stuff that he's doing, healing the people, saying the things that he's doing, the Pharisees had to be flipping out on every hand. He really upset the apple cart. So when you start reading through the life of Christ, and you read about these characters, or you see him in Acts chapter 23, it helps, I think, to have this background. All right, Matthew chapter 15, 1 and 2. That's our next reference.
The scribes and the Pharisees, who were from Jerusalem, came to Jesus saying, why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders, for they do not wash their hands?
All right, Jesus was faulted for this, as we've already seen with his host, the Pharisee host in Luke chapter 11. Now they're on the lookout and they say, your disciples, they also don't wash their hands. Again, not for hygiene, not because it was part of Moses' law. And then Luke chapter 7, verses 36 through 39. Let's get that in there too.
Now one of the Pharisees was requesting him to dine with him, and he entered the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. And behold, there was a woman in the city who was a sinner. And when she learned that he was reclining at the table in the Pharisee's house, she brought an alabaster vial of perfume. And standing behind him at his feet, weeping, she began to wet his feet and her with her tears, and kept wiping them with the hair of her head, and kissing his feet, and anointing them with the perfume. Now when the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would know who and what sort of person this woman is who is touching him, that she is a sinner."
Okay, thank you. We don't know what the profession or what the background of this woman was. A lot of people think she was a prostitute. For the sake of today's class, let's just say that she was a harlot. All right, so now we've got the Pharisees. If you don't wash your hands in the way that we prescribe, you're a bad person. And if you pick grain on the Sabbath day, you know, you walk through you're a bad person. And now, if you're there, you're reclining, and there is this person who comes up who is a bad person, and they start honoring you, then again, you know, you must not be a servant of God, otherwise you would really know. I mean, can you imagine how big that stuff really is? It's like the person who comes and says, "Oh man, we've got this big problem. People are upset and everything is just falling apart." Well, what is it? Well, the delivery truck was 5 minutes late. Well, that's probably not the end of the world. You know, we can make do for another 5 minutes. But these people, they majored in the minors, they minored in the majors. And some of them were influential. We're going to have to kind of highlight things here and hopefully pick this up a little bit more. But remember, Acts chapter 5 and verse 34, Gamaliel, he would have been a Pharisee after some people became Christians. Acts chapter 15 and verse 5, let's just take a quick look at that. I want to show you, they were so influential that Acts 5 says, "And there rose up certain of the sect of the Pharisees who believed, saying, it is needful to circumcise them and to charge them to keep the law of Moses." Acts 15 takes us back to that question about circumcision. There were people who had become Christians, they had been Pharisees, and yet even though they had become converts to Christianity, they still exerted a great deal of influence even in the church. These people were really, really important. And John chapter 12 and verse 42, let's go ahead and close it out there, but I will get that passage to us because I think that's going to be a good breaking point. John 12, 42, "Nevertheless, even of the rulers, many believed on him, but because of the Pharisees, they did not confess it lest they should be put out of the synagogue." If you say that Jesus Christ is from God, certainly if you say that he is the Son of God, what are we going to do to your synagogue membership? When it comes Saturday, we've changed the locks. You're not going to be welcome here. I mean, these people were just unbelievable. And we see snapshots of that from time to time, but the power that they had, and again, that plays into Acts chapter 23,